The Vox Markets Podcast.
It's 12 o'clock. Welcome to Taking Stock. What is it? It's 18th of the 1st, 2024. I have the man of the moment, Vadim Alexander, head of healthcare, SP Angel. You all right, fella?
How are you doing, Justin?
And welcome along, everyone else, if you're joining us right now. Don't forget to comment if you've seen any company news that you think we could shed any light on. Probably not, but we'll have a go. By all means, comment there. Hit that thumbs up button. Subscribe to the channel, of course. And download the Vox Markets app. It's free to use. Voxmarkets.co.uk. Let's have a quick look at the markets, Vadim, see what's happening here. There you go, FTSE 100. There's a little rise in the FTSE 100. It's up a smidge. We had that big sell-off yesterday. Really big sell-off because we missed by, what, 0.1 of a point, I think it was. It was supposed to, it was, you know, CPI was 3.9, expected to go to 3.8. But it went,
and it went to 4, right?
0.1, largely, that was down to, like, down to this saying, duty on alcohol and tobacco. So it was a little blip. And I'm thinking, this is going to happen. This is the market. You know, the sentiment is low. When things don't come in as expected, even with company results, things take a hammering. But I do think that we are slowly grinding upwards, but we'll take hits. You know, it's like that old Rocky saying, it isn't how hard you can hit, it's how hard you can take a hit and keep going forward. You know, and it's a bit like the markets. It'll take hits like this because there will be, you know, it's never going to be smooth, the recovery. But I do think we're on the path to recovery, and you will take big hits like yesterday, do you think?
Yeah, no, well, look, I mean, you're absolutely right. I agree with the path is always a zigzag upwards. But I really find that this is not a major concern, this small blip in inflation coming down. But I just think it's the contrast of last week. We had three major forecasts downgrading inflation for and saying that rates will come down faster because inflation is going to hit 2% by April, right? Yeah. You had, I think, Capital Economics and a couple of other investment banks saying that they're downgrading or basically accelerating the deceleration in inflation, which was all positive, right? And then we had markets kind of reacting to that. And this was a surprise, complete opposite to that. But I just don't feel like this is a problem. I genuinely believe I'm more in the camp of saying inflation's no longer an issue. It's coming down. And rates, look at the banks, look at all the mortgages. They continue to adjust, right? So forget what we're saying. The banks are all saying that through their actions in terms of cutting rates on mortgages. So they are all forecasting now internally, rates coming down. So that's fantastic. Yeah. That to me, that thesis, I don't think is changing. If we see mortgage rates go up, then we'll know we're wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Inflation, while it's still high, because it is 4% on top of what was previously 11%, whatever. I said maybe the last 2% would be hard, but we have to readjust. If you go back, this is the average for interest rates over the last 30 years. 5% runabout is the average. So it's not really, to a certain extent, I think we have to get used to it, high interest rates. It will come down, but we sort of have to get used to it. And it does do us a favor in that it does clear out all these sort of zombie companies that are existing on free cash, pretty much. But anyway, so the title of this is it time to take advantage of the sentiment of the market? Because the market's bad. Let's have a quick look. So FTSE up a smidge, it was down yesterday. Like I said, my biggest faller yesterday, really oddly, I own all microcaps, small caps, and I own one fund, which is the FTSE 350, highest paying yielding stocks, dividend wise. That was the biggest faller, that fund. And so it was the big caps, but even it was a big hit yesterday, but FTSE up 0.17%. FTSE AIM All share. I've said this for a long time. This is about, must be about six or seven shows on the bounce now, where the AIM All share is outperforming everything else. I mean, it's taken a big hit over the last 2 years, the biggest hit over the last 2 years. So now maybe it's pricing that in and recovering a bit. Some of the fallers here, pharmaceuticals, GD Sports, Admiral. But this is why I think the sentiment is ridiculous. And we've often seen this, Vadim, and you've picked shares where sentiment's been so bearish that you think the valuations on some of the companies, I hate to say an investment is a no-brainer because there's always risk, but it almost gets to the stage where these stocks are beaten down so much that you think that's a no-brainer at this level. They've got plenty of cash. They're going to get to profitability in a few years' time. They're sitting at cash levels valuation-wise. But an example of this, I'll go to the front page of Vox here. I interviewed Richard Harpham, XP Factory, and They had a knockout of this end of year trading update. I'll show you now. But we're talking about a 27 million market cap company, right? They've opened up these boom battle bars. It's been 18 months of expansion, really opening up. Now, the opening up will continue, but not at that rate. They've gone from almost sub 10 sites to over 40 odd sites now. And this is like 27 million market cap company. Group turnover, 44 million, 95% of the year. Like for like sales up 29%, Escape had up 17%, Christmas 50% like for like, Escape. And they are now going to be sort of, turning a profit from here on in. And of course, operational gearing will happen because they're not going to open as many sites now. And I just don't think you got any better than this. It's like phenomenal. But they're almost lumped in with the traditional leisure sector and hammered. And what's happened to the share price? It goes up, comes down. And so I'm thinking, sooner or later, the market will catch up with this because at the moment, like I said, it's just not performing. The share price is not performing. And it gets to the stage where you see there's a trailing range for the last few years, last year or so. And sooner or later, the market will realize it's not as bearish. Of course, there's a cost of living crisis. I did talk to Richard about that, the worrying cost of living. And he said, well, we got a lot of data on our customers. And he said, most of them, are okay. They're not skint students, most of them. They got excellent demographics. And he said, and a lot of our stuff is corporate. And so corporates, they're trying to go back to this hybrid model of coming back to the office. And one of the packages they're trying to do is trying to get people together. So regularly we're having massive corporate bookings because they want to create that team spirit amongst their employees. But it's just nuts. It rises. The odd thing is every time they release news, the share price goes up. So that suggests it's good news, but the market is like so bearish on this area, this sector, that it gets sold into. And I think sooner or later that will turn. It has to turn because fundamentally it's now undervalued. The broker price, 12-month broker price, is more than double that share price right there. And you're thinking, this is a bit insane. It is a bit insane. And this is where the market presents opportunities when sentiment is so bad. Do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. No, and that's been my feeling for the last year. I think I was a bit ambitious with the recovery in terms of timing and hoping that the end of the rate cycle, I was kind of hoping that the market would price it in earlier and start to rally. Hasn't happened. We're still bouncing, but at least we haven't gone lower, right? And now what we're seeing is we are genuinely seeing a recovery, and this is the time kind of to take. It's always never without risk, of course, otherwise the market would already be overpriced, right? So. Yeah. But the risk feels, the risk reward feels more on the upside rather than further downsides, barring any macro event like a war or something, a new war. But, all things considered, the sentiment, we are seeing stocks break through. And we mentioned this last week. We're seeing kind of one by one stocks get picked off. One that we've mentioned here, an AI play, which is eTherapeutics, which you and I have discussed in the past, that one's broken out. It's gone from a low of 8p to about 15, 16p now, and it seems more and more sustainable. I mean, they've had some good news, which is good. They've done a proper update to the market. I think it was yesterday they put out an update. What you want to see is exactly what this company is showing. But that's the good news element. But what we're also seeing is just a renewed optimism in these stocks. I mean, I can walk you through what they've announced.
You've covered this, and I like this company a lot. And I did have an alert on them, and literally an alert a while back, and it hit a low. And I think it was, and literally, because sometimes I have too many alerts on, and I let them go by. I think it hit its 50-day moving average here. Yeah. And I ignored it. But they are in a very exciting area. They're in where biology meets, computational sort of power of AI.
Correct.
And we've always said, this is a very rich area, this. If you've got a lot of data and you can literally, replicate or forecast what's going to happen in the human bodies or animals with computers, it's a very hot area. So explain what they're doing, if you could.
So that's exactly it. So they are... I would say the one player in the UK that is in this space, that really overlaps computational biology. Okay.
Yeah.
So what the promise of this whole area is starting to deliver. Okay. We've seen there's a DeepMind was a company that was acquired by Google years ago. that are now able to predict protein folding. This is something that takes years in a lab to grow crystals to establish whether a protein will fold this way or a protein will fold that way. That has major implications for drug development. Okay, so now we're with high accuracy able to do that in a, by a computer is able to do that, or in high, you know, very powerful AI algorithms are able to do that. So we, it's coming through now in the evidence base. Okay. So what these guys do are very, very much in the same domain. They identify targets specifically in the context of liver cells. Okay. So they're specialists in silico modeling of liver cells. They have very powerful algorithms and increasingly so with AI. And they're able to predict targets that pharmaceutical companies or they themselves can take into clinic and develop further. Okay, so develop into in drugs. Okay, the second element of that. So that's their core technology platform in terms of the in silico model, if you like. Mm-hmm. Over and above that, they're specialists in RNA silencing, which is a modality in terms of drug development. So this is, and I won't get too technical here, but instead of developing a small molecule to hit a protein target, you develop an RNA molecule that goes and silences a gene in your body. Okay. And by silencing that gene, you have an effect. And that effect is what this, the in silico model does. It finds genes that may have, if you downregulate those genes, okay, by silencing the RNA, you may have the desired effect that you're looking for. So either be it, reducing cholesterol production in the liver. That's one example, okay? But there's a million different things the liver does, and there are millions of different types of targets, okay? But it's the combination of those two things that have accelerated the drug development of these targets, okay, to, and this is what they've just announced. In the last announcement, they've gone from an idea of a gene that could be targeted to a druggable target, and that's been demonstrated in animal modeling to work. And that they've done that in 9 months. And that's the whole promise of what AI brings to drug development. And they're showing it now, you know, just recently announced, and that's probably why the shares are continuing to rally, is that we're actually seeing it come through in these companies, in the data that these companies are producing. Now, this is things that used to take years, okay? Yeah. So this is a company that's live right now, currently doing it and delivering on a very short time frame, which was the dream. That's the AI dream, is being able to model these things in a computer very quickly and then having it deliver in a lab and then quickly from a lab in animal modeling. And they're showing that.
Yeah, no, it's a huge potential going forward. I mean, they are 95 million. They have plenty of cash, though. I think last the update they said is, I think it was like 20 million they had there.
And yeah, so, 20 million. That was what the announcement said. So yeah, this is yesterday's announcement. Yeah. So all cashed up, as compared to many other drug development businesses. You can't say the same for many companies, but no, they have a good cash balance. They're wisely using that cash and delivering as per the rest of that announcement. But also they have good backers, which is another thing. You know, they have M&G, Schroeder's, as investors. So, you know, they're in a very, very strong position. And the other thing is that this, you know, the deal possibilities are increasing very quickly. So, you know, I don't think this is going to happen in a week, but the real proof in the pudding down the line will be striking a deal with either a big pharma company, but not necessarily. It could be a tech company. Big tech is moving into this space very quickly too. NVIDIA, I think we've spoken about this in the past. NVIDIA struck multiple deals, one with a pharma company recently in the last 6 months. And, you know, they are moving quickly into this space. Google, Microsoft,
NVIDIA. That's what Ali said this. He said it's increasingly now, I think, biopharma companies are going to be, tech pharma companies pretty much. They have to have this, you know, if they want to expedite, you know, finding drugs, new drugs, they've got to use AI and in that way.
It's it's a new area called tech bio. As opposed to biotech, it's tech bio. I know it sounds silly, but it's actually happening very quickly.
It's almost the tech come first. You need the tech to find the bio side of it.
Exactly.
Okay. So, look, a few comments. By all means, comment. Riffs Us Off says, yes, it's generally better to buy when market sentiment is negative. I'm digging that. You know, thinking about all the decent winners I've had, they have been hammered on sentiment, and you can see them changing a little bit, and you can see the news getting less worse. For example, a new company, their losses are big, and also their losses come down massively, and their top line growth, but yet the market's still pricing in them as a big loss maker. And so there, and it's almost like when it's sentiment on a sector is hammered, pick out the best ones in that sector and thinking there's no way that should be hammered with the rest of them or whatever. Good afternoon, everyone, investor. Markets are all over the place. Yeah, they are a little bit. They aim up a little bit. But I think we'll have these almost big drops some days and then a grind up slowly higher. And that's the way it'll go, I think, over the next few months, because we are going towards, whether it's going to be in May, June or whatever, we are going to be seeing interest rates come down. And, the markets will start to slowly price that in. I mean, the American markets have, overly bullish. That's the problem. They've gone, they've rallied a bit hard, haven't they? And now they're starting to see, now they're seeing inflation not coming down as fast as they thought. We'll get a bit sticky at that, 3.5% level, and they're starting to worry a bit. So, Rich,
the perennial frustration with the U.S. markets is they rally aggressively, and then we rally a little bit, and then they correct. And then we go down. We just don't get the rallies. We get the corrections. We don't get the rallies.
Exactly. We seem to go down with them, but we don't go up with them. But there we are. But to a certain extent, I do believe, with capital inflows and outflows, I think it's an international market. If people keep saying that the American markets are overvalued, and UK, Europe, especially UK, is undervalued.
Yeah, it's good value.
Because there are global fund managers, and they'll see that. And Rich Dad said, do you have a view on Indivia? Do you know anything about Indivia? You're more small cap, aren't you?
You mean Nvidia? Nvidia, the tech company?
What's the ticker? No. Indivia.
Indivior. Yeah, I know which one you're talking about. Yeah, this is the one that they have basically a product that is, it's probably a 1 billion market cap business, roughly. It's about that size, from memory. And they have their main product is an opiate derivative type
that's
product.
Right, yes.
So this is like to help with
addiction to opiates.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Exactly.
I remember them having a patent dispute and all that stuff. And
they did
something in court.
I think it's been resolved, though. I think the patent disputes or the big litigation has been resolved, from what I remember.
Earlier, Indivia prevails in striking claims in UK litigation. Is
there
one
you
day.
Go.
But they're doing a big share buyback. All I've got here news is literally them buying back their own shares. It's quite frustrating when you try to find a result somewhere. But look at the chart here.
It's been hit hard. And, historically, if you could go further back, how does that, in years, how many years back is that?
Was it spun out? Who's it spun out from? I remember it was being spun out from someone in 2016, 15.
Yeah.
One of the bigger pharma companies. Anyway.
I mean, there is one thing to say, which is a risk factor, is, since the whole Sacklers fiasco, the Sackler family and Purdue Pharma, right? With OxyContin and all the opioids,
Have you seen that documentary on Netflix? It's phenomenal. You realize that it's still a massive problem in America, but literally it's like they come blasé to it because every day the headlines are, there's still a huge opiate problem, addiction problem in America.
It's massive. Absolutely. So the whole sector is kind of, affected by it, if you like. Do you know what I mean? So, there's negative sentiment around this. So I'm not making any opinions or making any statements here. I'm just saying, there is some concern around all of that, and it has negative read across to all companies, including in Indivior. I'm sure that's a bit of a drag on their shares. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's had a bit of a fall off down. What was that on the 9th of November? I don't know why it fell there, but let me just move my head. On 9th of November, it fell by 11%. But I would say that's starting a downtrend, and it needs to break above 1250 to break that. But I mean, it seems like it may need to be in a range for a while, but it doesn't seem like it's in an uptrend yet.
The risk with this stock, I think, it's kind of like, tobacco went whatever it was 20 years ago, big tobacco. It's no longer... Yeah. It's no longer qualifies for ESG funds and everything, and everything's moving in that direction. And I think that the risk with Indivior is that it falls into that category alongside Purdue Pharma and all these other companies. Even though it's not quite the same thing, it doesn't matter. You know how it's like collateral damage, right? It's, you know, collateral damage from the Purdue Pharma fiasco.
Front page of Vox, I said, I've done two interviews this morning. Richard from XP Factory and Ali from eTherapeutics. Paul's talked about Evan Trans, strong one H1 performance. Some of the most read, or in fact, the most followed, DG Innovate. This is a very interesting company. It's 20 million market cap now, but it wasn't. It was literally sub 5 million. And then there was news that three quite senior ex-Tesla guys joined the board. Now, this is a little Welsh company developing these sort of sustainable environmental considered improvements, electric mobility storage. But they've announced today that their Pareto motor patent has been granted in China. So, of course, it's the biggest, they say, the world's largest market for electric vehicles. So it's a significant milestone. So it's rallying there. I don't know what, so 20 million market cap. Of course, as I think they're completely pre-revenue, I think. So they got the directors have done a convertible here, which is, you know, it's not a bad thing when you get directors involved in convertibles. So, you know, it's a good game. So what else is up here? I know there's Boohoo again. Mike Ashley, you know, from the Fraser Group. He's he's buying ASOS and Boohoo. Slowly, incrementally, he's increasing his holding.
What's that percentage now?
21%. 21% in Boohoo.
And
what is that? He's in ASOS. He's
Same. He's moving. I mean, definitely, he's been doing so for at least a year. I followed him I don't think he knows that I followed him or cares. Oh, yeah. But that was one of the triggers for me to start to buy into those stocks as well. So far, I've had it wrong in that, you know, nothing's happened to the shares. They've just been bouncing around the bottom. Yeah. But the hope is that there is a path forward for these two online retailers. And, you know, they're bombed out. That's the ultimate point. That's the justification, is that these are companies that are worth 10 times what they're worth now, only 3 years ago, you know. And admittedly, there's the online element during COVID and all that, but they were darlings in many respects before COVID. And the question is, you know, do we think that one day that will return? Fundamentally, I do believe they will. It will. Will they survive it? I think so. Again, with backers like Mike Ashley. And ultimately, the question is the competition. So there's like Shein, you know, that's coming into the market pretty aggressively. That's the Chinese, you know, manufacturer. Yeah. So there are some competitive threats that are real. Some of them are business model that, you know, I think ASOS is struggling a little bit with the new business model, and it's still to be decided whether it works, whether their turnaround their turnaround is in play, but whether the turnaround is successful is a whole other story. You know, they've moved away. They've had to take massive write downs on current stock. They moved away, consolidating their portfolio of brands to the ones that are most profitable, and, you know, discontinued the ones that aren't. And the question is that going to work? We'll see.
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of got in around slightly higher levels, around 5,500, I think, for ASOS, and it's about 38 now. Similar to Boohoo, I think 38 or 39, it's at 35. Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
It'd be interesting to see, you know, what he's doing, what his plans are, because if you could buy both of these, there's got to be surely some synergistic, you know, advantages in having these two big online retailers. And if you could, logistically, to try and put them together would be quite difficult, I suppose. But I would like to be logistics boss of that, trying to merge those two. But I don't know what his plans are. What is he trying to do? I think he's probably playing one up against the other, saying, I'm going to buy either you or ASOS, you know? That's the kind of deal. And saying, it's up to you. It depends who's more favourable to my, you know, takeover. I don't know. But anyone has any ideas? What is Mike Ashley doing? I do love the fact that he does buy bombed out stuff, you know? And he collects high street bomb outs, doesn't he? And look at the share price of Fraser Group. That's cracking. That was the one to buy, you know.
It's true, but I guess the question is, you know, is he buying? He cannot be buying 20% stakes in these two businesses without a plan down the line. You know, he's continuing to buy. That's the thing. there was a time back a year ago when I bought in, when I saw him buy for the first time. And I thought, okay, so this guy knows exactly, we've spoken about this on this podcast. You know, this guy knows how to call the bottom on these stocks, you know? Well, not quite, but close enough. You know what I mean? These stocks are down 90%, whether it's down 95% or, you know, it's, it was close enough. But nothing's really happened in the last year. You know, there's been a turnaround strategy in both companies. They're still struggling. But he's been increasing his stake that whole time. So he's clearly got something. There's got to be something there is a plan there. There has to be.
Yeah. So Steve says, record day for RNS announcements with companies with X in the ticker. Who else? XP Factory. Who else is there? Something else.
That's a ETX. ETX. E-Therapeutics. That's in the ticker.
Yeah, exactly. Phil says, what's your feeling now that you've sold XP Factory? This is what happened, right? I'll tell you the story of XP Factory. I saw the growth in them, and I literally didn't factor in a bear market coming, you know. But this is where that arrow is. That's what I pretty much bought in November 2020. 7 pence. There was a 44 pence. I don't think I sold any, you know. And literally, I started to sell a few. And then the majority I sold, it was literally dipped down at a support level around here, I think. It dipped down here. So if anything, if I just paid attention to the 200-day moving average, I'd have made a lot more money. So I held on too long. I loved the stock. But again, they rose so quickly. Sometimes you've got to be... And then, you know, if we were in a bull market, this wouldn't have come back down. Because their operations are improving all the time. It's just because of the bear market. And that's what's happened. It's just come down, they raise money and buy boom, battle bar. And since then, it's been, you know, the sentiment towards leisure stocks have been dwindling. It will take off again. But in my mind, you can see I put an alert there on that 18 pence. It needs to get above that. It needs to close above that properly because it hasn't done that for a long time. In fact, back in August 2023. So if it can close above these previous highs, I think that then you're on to a trend and may consider getting back in. But I want to see a trend because in this market, you know, you can go sideways for a long time. And I don't want my capital tied up. For that amount of time. And to be honest, I should have been more efficient and I should have taken a bit more off up here when I was... Literally 7 pence I was in at, 40 pence, you know. So I should have been a bit more efficient with that. But I do like the company. I think it's going to do very well, and Richard's very good. But it's just, you know, if this was a company paying a dividend, I wouldn't mind sitting there. And but it's not; it's a growth stock, so you know you've got to allow for that. So I'm not going to sit at the company and have cash there, sitting there, going up and down, getting frustrated for years on end. But I do like the company. I will consider getting back in if it starts to move into an uptrend a bit. In fact, so I do like it. I mean, you know, it's a good company, I think. And I think it's just been lumped in with a sector that's, you know, in fact, this week, I don't know if you saw that, Vadim, there was the biggest nightclub owner in the UK went into administration. And I think people are going away from nightclubs and stuff like that. And whenever I've been to this boom battle bar, they've always been busy. I think social, what do you call it? Social gaming, pretty much, in bars.
Yeah.
You can go and have a drink. You can play games and all that stuff. It's not just standing around having a drink. You actually have a bit of a laugh as well. Chuck some axes or do some shuttleboard or darts, all that stuff. You know, all these VR darts and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
it's a bit different, you know. So I think it's a new trend. It's going to be around for a while.
Oh, for sure. But it seems like there's a permanent shift. So a lot of the younger generations are moving away from drinking. You know, they're living a cleaner lifestyle, going to bed on time.
Yeah, that plays into it. If you're not a big drinker, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to go to a pub and just stand around drinking or like clubs drinking. Some people may go for a dance, but it's late night. But I mean, think these bars like this that have games where you actually pay for the games. There's two sets of revenue streams here. They do food, they drink, and they do games. So games, if you're not a big drinker, you still go along with the rest of your mates and play the games and eat food.
Could do something.
So there's still money to be in there. If you're not a pub, you're not a big drinker. You can have one glass of Coke. That's it.
And leave. Exactly. And that's right. Yeah, absolutely. And you're absolutely correct. So like, so one replacement in the beverages industry has been all these zero alcohol products, which are booming, right? But the problem, I guess, it's not quite like, exactly to your point, it's not like having 8 pints at a, you know, in a pub from like six to midnight.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, from 6 to midnight, you're going to have 1 0 beer and then go home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
This is very interesting. I was scrolling down here and I saw this advert here. Now, one of the biggest fallers of the day, I don't know if you've seen this, by the way, it's kind of the biggest rises. But we'll get Watches of Switzerland, one of the biggest fallers. But just covering this, Strategic Minerals, they've had a hard time of it. I've spoken to these guys on the podcast quite a few times, but they're in exploring, in fact, John, your colleague there, has talked about these quite a few times, but they do have a revenue stream selling magnetite. But one of their big sort of, you know, clients sort of dipped off in 2023 and didn't buy as much off them. But that major client is coming back and buying 30 tons, so they see revenue. And so it was, so you see tonnage has gone down. It halved in 2023, but it's in that new client is coming back now to buy more of them, and there's potential other clients going to buy more. So it's almost a big rally here on relief rally, 50% of the day. It is a tiddler. It is like 3 million market cap. So they've literally gone from 1.5, and that's almost like a relief rally. So it's nice to see that. But another one, which is quite interesting, I thought, in the hydrogen space, Ceres Power, 390 million. And they come out with news today, signs first hydrogen license with Delta. And it's a lot of hype about green hydrogen. And, you know, yeah, other companies are still pretty much not commercializing it yet. And it's still quite expensive. But these hydrogen stocks are quite expensive. But this is the one, the agreement here is worth revenue of 43 million to Ceres through technology transfer development licenses. So that's nice to see that someone now is actually, and this is going to happen, isn't it? We've talked about, you know, future potential in these stocks for a long time. But now you start to see, by the way, Delta employs 80,000 people based in Taiwan. They got a market cap of 23 billion, so it's a big company. But what's the 230 million? But if you look at, you know, on traditional fundamental basis, this, you know, massively overvalued these interim results. Let's have a look at this. So they did literally, they did 11.3 million revenue. So even if you double that, and it's actually 30 for the year, that's, you know, still 10 times sales. So
I mean, that's cheap, just difficult. Yeah. But then again, it's announcements like this that
yeah, exactly. But I mean, they're all quite expensive. If you look at Ceres, CWR, Ceres Power, they said they've been hammered, but they were, like, ITM is another one. ITM was like almost a FTSE 100 company. It's had no revenue, ITM Power. But it's like, it's just the future potential of these stocks. But I think they will take off again. You know, this is the hope pipe potential. If you were in before this, you know, in the big hope, you've done very well, gone from 30 pence to 7 quid ITM Power did. And now, of course, that's when funding was easy, because these companies are burning quite a lot of cash, you know. And so when funding was easy, the bull market was on, and they could do placings left, right, and center, that's what happens. But the opposite happens in the bear market, where, you know, people tighten their purse strings and they can't get access to cash. They've got plenty of cash at ITM, by the way, but they're still burning quite a bit. But it's almost like it's still value. What's ITM? I think ITM is still one of the biggest. Let's look at the market cap. But there are interesting plays, but I do think, well, no, 320, in fact, Ceres is overtaking it now. So on that news, so that's quite interesting. But what watch do you have, Vadim? I imagine you've got an armful of expensive Swiss watches.
No, I actually have no watch. No watch.
Oh, do you?
Debating whether or not because I don't really need one. I have my phone. You know, I just don't feel a need for one. But I am kind of watching these wearables technologies, right? Because I think that has a long way to go in terms of, if we can crack ECGs and things like that in real time, you know, we could revolutionize. And there's stuff out there. There's stuff in the pipeline. It's just not quite there yet on all the biometrics, and there'll be more. But you can see why, you know, a lot of these tech companies, well, Apple being the lead with the Apple Watch. And that is one product I am interested in maybe buying, you know, an Apple Watch. I've been thinking about it for a long time. I'm just forever waiting for the next
version. That's the trouble.
Hoping for, you know, a new, what do you call it?
Model update.
But it's more well like a new biometric.
I think mine's a year old now, but you put your finger on it. I don't know how accurate it is, your heartbeat and all that stuff. But talk about watches. This is Watches of Switzerland. Yeah. This is almost a play on the bull market, because, you know, when people are flush, they want a flashy. I've never wanted a flashy watch. I've never wanted an expensive watch. I just see it as a liability. I would be scared to damage it or scared to get it nicked. I never see the point. But during the bull market, like Watches of Switzerland, they only listed back in June 2019 at £3 a share. up to 15 quid a share, pretty much. And now it's almost like that. The hydrogen place here, it's a, you know, money side. I mean, they're generating cash, but you realize the luxury market also can take a hit. And they've said here in their, they've had other complications go on, like I think Rolex signed a license deal with somebody else. But they say now, experience a volatile trading performance in the run to and beyond Christmas as challenging macroeconomic conditions impact consumer spending. They said, in light of the recent challenges, trading conditions, and base more cautious view of the outlook for the remainder of the fiscal year. So the guidance, they've got the guidance, they've reduced their guidance. But you can see there, it's maybe one again. When the markets turn, people feel a bit flush again.
Yeah.
It's like so many sectors that they will rally again, probably, you know? When people want to start buying flashy watches again, it'll rally. But, you know, but you think it. I just think sometimes if you're buying a flash watch, it's a show off. It's almost like people who have real money don't buy flashy things to show off to people because they don't need to. It's that the people who think they're well off or want to show they're well off, show it off. And so I think the people who are buying these watches also have other bills because they're a bit sort of, you know, a bit loose with the cash. And they probably have mortgages going up and some of that now. Yeah, all right, I can't afford another watch. In fact, I'm going to sell this watch. So it's not the truly rich people buying these. I think the people who want to be rich, who want to be seem to be rich buying them, you know? But look at that. It's been an awful chart since, you know, 200-day moving average there. All the way down from April 2022. And a nasty trading update here, gap down. It rolled down, recovered, and then gap down again. It's like, in fact, there's a gap down here. That story about, you know, bad news comes in threes. It's like gap down.
That's right.
Gap
that's
down.
Right. That's
gap down.
Exactly. Absolutely. There's your three profit warnings.
Yeah, absolutely. Never chase a falling knife, you know, because bad news tends to keep on coming for a while. You know, it takes a while to turn around a company, doesn't it? Once you're having a tough time, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of like the various stages of grief. You know, there's the first profit warning is the management's realization has just begun. You know what I mean? Yeah. Then the second
shareholders get denial. Shareholders get denial at the first.
The various stages of grief. Exactly. Yeah. Well, it happens to management teams and it happens to the investors too.
Yeah. So it's denial. First profit warning. Then the second profit warning is anger from shareholders. They go, why have they done that again? What is wrong with them? And then the third one, you're almost acceptance. Oh, okay. That's it. So another one warning today is Bango. And this has been around for a while. And it's always been, you know, hyped up a little bit, Bango. They enable online payments. This is, you know, I remember when online payments started becoming sort of the thing, or even way before, because it's going to be the next big thing. Bango really had a high profile there. I've never really kept track of it, but it looks like an 86 million market cap. Online payments, the mass market, internet giants that wanted to reach everyone. So they've come up with a trading statement, and I couldn't see what the problem was, right? It's down 38% today. And I thought, okay, revenue of 46 million, okay, two times sales, whatever, pretty much. Nine new long-term recurring digital vending machine contracts signed in period, telco, average, you know, recurring revenue. I thought adjusted EBITDA is between five, okay, it's not particularly cheap. They are 12 times, 13 times EBITDA, maybe. And then I thought, what's going on here? Right here, there we are, this one here, full year total adjusted EBITDA expecting the range 5-6, which is below analyst expectations. They just snuck that in there. It's like they've put a buried it there, but they haven't buried it enough to avoid tanking the share price. It has gone bang pretty much, but
that's a profit warning, you know. That's what it is. It's you've missed expectations.
I couldn't quite find it. I thought, what's that? I read it twice. I don't understand what's going on. I don't know what the expectations were, but which is below expectations.
It doesn't matter anymore. Share price knows.
They whispered that, below expectations. But the market heard it loud and clear. Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
I mean, look at that stock. It's so volatile from 2006. I mean, look at the range there. It's gone from 240 down to 40 pence. And it's like that all the way, 240. Maybe it's heading back towards that 240 pence again. But it's profit warnings are not, there's no mercy.
But what's so frustrating, I don't know the history of the stock in terms of profit warnings, but it looks volatile, like they've been having profit warnings for years. That's the way it looks from that chart that you've just shown me. And I guess the ultimate point is you kind of cannot have management repeating the same mistakes. It's fine on one profit warning cycle to understand that, you know, there's, like we just said, the stages of grief, the stages of realization, and they usually come in threes. But what I don't understand is why a company should be profit warning year in, year out. Just set the expectations right. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. If the set expectations are, you know, anyway.
Yeah, if you set them very low, then people don't expect anything. And it's the trouble is, I suppose, if you are a loss-making company, you know, and you need to raise money, you have to get the share price up. So you have to, you know, say, oh, we're growing at an alarming rate. Fantastic. And all that stuff.
Yeah. But,
anything else here? Not a lot. There's cancellation of let me just share the screen here. What's happening here? How many watches are trading? Pretty much that's it. I was looking, in fact, do you know what? I looked at this interesting article here. UK lenders, this plays into the fear factor, and this is why market sentiment is down. UK lenders fear the biggest rise in household loan defaults since 2009. So there is a survey, Bank of England's quarterly credit condition survey showed a reading of plus 31.7. That's all right. I don't know what the index is based on. But it said if realised, this would represent the biggest increase in loan defaults since late 2009 during the depths of the Great Financial Crisis. However, it said lenders have been too pessimistic about loan defaults in the past, with an expectation of around about 34.3 in late 2023. By the way, the survey showed plus 23.5 reading for loan defaults in Q4 2023. I don't understand the index here. Is lower better? Oh yeah, high is worse. Okay, is that right? I think, who knows? I have no idea. But I worry, I suppose, about
But rates are already coming down. You see what I mean? So if they were up and up sustained and still going up and stuff, in the US, I think 30-year rates are, like, mortgages are all priced off the 30-year chart, right? It's about 7%, which is pretty punishing. It's difficult. That's rough. Here we've got just last week they've dropped below 4%. So it's starting to become a little bit. It's not quite accommodative yet, but you know, if they start to push near 3%, I don't think we're going to have a mortgage crisis on our hands with, you know, massive defaults and everything. There's always the tail end of it. That there's always some people that are overexposed, but. It just doesn't feel like we're not in the same territory where the Bank of England is now pedal to the metal with rates going up still, and prepared to destroy the mortgage market and have, you know, banks' balance sheets compromised. That's never been the case, but it's even less the case now with inflation coming down. And yes, we've had this small blip of inflation at 4% instead of 3.8 expected. It's not enough for the bank to say, oh, we're going to start raising, we're going to continue raising rates. I think we're done with that. You know, like we said at the beginning of this call, the banks are already lowering mortgage rates. Yeah. So the expectations are very clear to the people who are actually acting on it. So, you know, we're now below 4% on mortgage rates. So,
exactly.
I guess my main point with this inflation, it was a burst of inflation. The central banks reacted. The rates, you know, mortgage rates have gone up, but there is also the fact that it is a burst, and I don't think it's sustained. So we are going to be at a new normal at rates that are higher than the, you know, 1% rates we had for years, but we're not going to be at 8%.
Let's be honest, though. Back in 2009, when the Great Financial Crash happened, reducing interest rates to zero, that was an emergency measure, and that lasted for 10 years. So it's almost that central banks shouldn't have done that. They should have, you know, when the economy started going a little bit more, then they should have eased them up slowly, you know, a quarter of a percentage point up a little bit, so people get used to the normalized, which I said the average over the last 30 years, I think, is about 5% anyway. So we're not above that.
I don't even think we're going to be at 5%. You see, at 7%, I can see 7% causing serious harm if it was sustained for mortgage rates. To the, you know, the stock of mortgages out there, and if it were sustained for 5 years, then you'd start to have I can imagine we'd start to see major defaults left, right, and center. You know, houses, distressed sales happening left, right, and center, and impacting the housing market. But we're not seeing that. We're seeing rates come back down to, say, a more normal level, and maybe around 3%. We'll probably, you know, I'm just guessing, but 3 to 4% normalizing.
Yeah, but the thing is, we need to normalize. There's a chance now for the banks to normalize interest rates.
Yeah,
to,
yeah.
You know, when interest rates come down, to bring them down to say 2.5%, 2%, 3%, which is no, it was lower than normal anyway. But yeah. The fact that, you know, the this emergency procedure they carried out by reducing, you know, interest rates and nothing created the problem. People just borrowing yeah. like crazy because there's no cost of money. You know, people yeah. don't care. They just borrow loads, and all of a sudden you get these, yeah. you know, these companies just borrowing loads of money, and now they're, yeah. they're realizing. No, it does cost money, actually, borrowing money, and now they're yeah. in trouble. So anyway, this is the inverted yield curve on a weekly basis. And of course, when the two-year yield is above the 10-year, that's what happens. But these are recessions in the red. So it inverts, it goes back to normal, re-inverts, and then we have a recession, generally. Look yeah. at this now, it's come very close. And look at it, it's inverted more than ever. And this is back to 1989.
Yeah. Yeah,
this
yeah.
is not, this 2000. This is a
serious
dot-com,
inversion. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dot-com bubble. That's the great financial crash. That's that was the COVID thing, but that was forced surging. And this is now. Look at this. It's nuts. It's gone really down here to almost, you know, 1% inversion. But now yeah. we are getting close to it reinverting, come back out. So you could say you may have a technical recession in the next few months or something. But to get you know, the AIM markets priced that in anyway. So
yeah.
And in fact, today it's nice to see. All the bonds coming back off. They did rally yesterday on that CPI number.
You know what would be interesting in that chart is superimposing markets, because obviously they're leading indicators as well, right? So here what you're saying is the inversion is a leading indicator of a recession coming, and it seems pretty accurate. You're absolutely right. So as it reverts, the recession comes, right?
Yeah.
I wonder what financial markets do overlaying that.
I have to adjust it because the S&P there. Where's the S&P? It's going up. Does it come down? I don't know. I'll have to look at it.
It's too hard to say. Yeah.
It's converted. Marvelous stuff. Let's just check it if I miss any more. XP Factories trading is good. Doesn't mention cash. Last time I looked, what was the broker note? It says it didn't need cash there. That's the broker note. So who knows? But anyway, I mean, when we'll soon find out when they. If full results come out in where are we? January in March, I think it is. Thanks for that, Vadim. Have a nice week weekend. And
thanks, Justin. You too.
You know, we'll speak to you next week.
Excellent. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.